as women, how do you get to the point where you're internally regulated, internally led, and sort of like you measure yourself up by internal standards? You're not sort of moved by what other people's opinions are because those are constantly shifting. Feel like you need no introduction, but we'll be polite. So go ahead and just introduce yourself. Tell everyone who you are.
I am Denisha Carter. I'm a singer, songwriter, the most liked person on TikTok.
Yeah. So glad to have you on. I feel like we've had so many conversations that are just the best, right? Like, and I just wanted to bring that onto this platform because I feel like the women who follow me will really benefit from just hearing about how to deal with negativity and how to be confident and having the sort of like unbothered confidence that's unwavering and standing on the things that you say and owning it and just the courage to be disliked. And that's something that I believe in strongly. It's actually the title of a book that we've talked about before. And I think it would be great to just sort of hear what that journey was like for you. If you're still on that journey, what were kind of the pitfalls in the beginning that you had to overcome?
You know, I think I've always been someone who is incredibly outspoken. And I think it comes from having a dad who was really good at making me confident and really good at, you know, making me believe in myself. But also I had a really unfortunate like school experience. I wasn't very liked in school, probably due to being outspoken about, you know, not so popular topics. But people push against you. You have to learn how to not put your self-esteem in their hands. And the only way, in my opinion, that I've been able to do that is by retorting. You know, if you say something negative about me, my immediate response is, that's not true. I disagree. I know who I am. You don't know who I am. You say that enough times out loud or in your head, you believe it. And it, you know, contributes to your real confidence. And so I think it's just always understanding that I deserve to take up space. I'm just as smart as anybody else can be. And nobody else gets to decide my value, my worth, my self-esteem is up to me.
To have that occur in a space where you don't feel like you're well-liked,
yeah,
was hard. But I'm sure, like, at least for me, and I'm sure for you a little bit, it's contributed to being able to deal with that online.
Definitely. I kind of have a system, I guess, in my head where it's like, do people not like what I'm saying or did I say something wrong? And those two things are very different for me. And I have people who are in my circle who aren't afraid to be like, yeah, that was off base, girly, reel it in. To look to when I say things that get, you know, pushback. Did I say something wrong here? Can you find fault in something I said? Was I too aggressive? Was I hurtful? What's the problem? Versus people just disagreeing with what I said.
There's a list, a short list of people whose opinions matter to me. Mm-hmm. And like the random user with the anime Abby is not on the list
at all.
And so it's like, because I have that list of people, and listen, I check in with those people regularly, and it seems like you do too, mm-hmm, where I'm like, look, here's what I said. Here's how they're taking it. Right. And there are times where they'll be like, I can see how they got that. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you said, but I can see how you got that. Maybe be a little bit more precise.
I also think we're quite self-aware. It's quite easy for me to tell when things are going to be a problem. It's then, again, is it a problem because it's wrong, or is it a problem because a lot of people won't like it?
Exactly. And that's not the same thing.
Something that I think you'll relate to, because you did successfully go to and finish law school, is that words matter, okay? And what usually is the problem is the way people phrase things and don't understand that depending on how they phrase things, it changes what they're saying.
100%.
I'll get comments that are like, she doesn't let people disagree with her. I physically cannot stop you from disagreeing with me. There is absolutely nothing I can do to you to stop from disagreeing with me. Mm-hmm. What you're upset about is the fact that I won't listen to you disagree with me, which I don't have to do. And then, you know, the response to that can be, well, why do we have to listen to you? We don't. I'm posting an opinion on my page. I'm not in your comment section. I'm not on. It's why when I stitch videos, I'm just talking about my general perspective on the video. I'm not arguing with the creator who made it because they don't have to care about what I said. They gave their
exactly
opinion. Like, mm-hmm. The disconnect there is what I think throws people off.
And I don't think people realize what we do as creators. I always tell people, like, as a creator, I'm not just out here posting things like without intention, I'm also trying to moderate a conversation. And when you come into the comments and you set up a straw man and you try to derail that conversation by responding to things that I didn't say or misconstruing things that I did say, it is my responsibility as a mediator of that conversation to either silence you or remove you from all future conversations. It's like building a deck on someone else's house. No, you've written a blog here. This is a script. Go film the video yourself and post it on your page. And so I think it'd be interesting to hear, like, for you, what your journey was to becoming someone who can have conversations that are nuanced, who can articulate their points in a precise way, right? Because that's a skill.
Well, part of it I can say with confidence is that I don't like being argued with in ways that don't make sense or are in bad faith. I don't want to hear about the exceptions that I didn't point out. So I'm either going to point them out or I'm just going to block you for trying to make me talk about exceptions to something I'm not speaking about. I want to entertain nuance because I understand that conversations and people are complex. And I also want to have honest conversations. And to be able to do that, you really have to try to understand with charitability where everybody could be coming from all of the time. And then I try to be a curious person. I try to be someone who is a good thinker, who can take information or extrapolate the correct, you know, pieces from information that's presented and construct arguments that I myself can't poke holes in.
And I've talked about that too, is like, if I post something, there's kind of a checklist. Is this valuable? Does this edify? And does it do kind of more good than harm? And so once it passes that internal checklist, then I just kind of decide to put it out and deal with that negativity. I have seen, you know, situations where it's been sometimes seemingly for weeks on end, you're all anyone's talking about on the app. I can't imagine what that's like real time, but how do you deal with that kind of negativity in a way that protects your headspace?
People's opinions about me are not my problem. They are not something that I'm really interested in. They're certainly not something I internalize. I know who I take opinions from. It's very few people on TikTok. That, for the first part, makes it very, very easy. The second thing is, like, I understand it. I say things, apparently, that can be polarizing, and people are going to talk about it. If you're doing something that is important or impactful or relevant in any capacity, people are going to have things to say, and they're completely entitled to do that. So I think it's just knowing who you take opinions from, knowing who matters to you. It's your decision if it's an opinion that you factor in.
I have what I call a post and go mentality, where I post and I stay on for maybe like 20 minutes, because those tend to be the comments from people who are genuinely following you because they like your content. And then I just go, have at it.
Sometimes I'll like give the method to people where it's like, respond if it's going to do you or your audience more benefit than it's going to give the person who's causing the problem.
How genuine? Because I get this all the time, right? Especially as a Black woman who presents the way that I do. How genuine is your tone? How genuine is your delivery? How, like, if I was talking to Denisha on a Friday night over drinks, is that the affect that I would get?
Before I answer that question, connected to that question, what I think is very interesting about people is that when they don't understand something, they assign a maliciousness to it almost. Like, it can't be that I'm playing a character, that I'm having fun with something, or that I'm, you know, just neutrally behaving. It's, I'm trying to get away with some sort of secret or pull the wool over your eyes. I'm a singer. So I try to speak in ways that don't damage my voice. So I speak kind of out of my nose, if that makes any sense, which gives a softer effect. In terms of the calmness or the flatlineness, people will be like, how are you so calm when talking about such, you know, aggressive topics? And it's like, because I'm talking to my cell phone. Is it genuine? Absolutely. Do I have different ways that I behave in different situations? Also, absolutely. But there's no maliciousness. I'm not attempting to fool anyone. My real voice is the same as it is on TikTok. It just depends how loudly I'm speaking to you.
I feel like it brings out something that's really important that people fail to realize, which is that the people that you watch on social media are multidimensional, complex, human beings with different moods, different tones, different, you know, different elements to their personality. Mm-hmm. And recently on TikTok, I've been playing a little bit and people are like, oh my God, like, who is this person? Like, I never knew that you like had a sense of humor. And it's like, well, honestly, a sense of humor is a form of intelligence. So if you think someone's intelligent, oftentimes they'll be funny.
Yes.
That's one. Two, you have to understand, just like you said, there's a lot that goes into how you sort of decide to present yourself on social media. If you really think about the big picture about what your brand is, right? You're already talking about topics that are agitating. So then if also your affect was inflammatory, it would be almost impossible to watch.
Yeah.
In the same way, like if I'm sitting here telling you something about dating, which is already in like an emotionally triggering thing, and I'm coming at it with so much sauce, it would be almost impossible to watch, right? That's why we have gel cap pills. Because some things are just easier to take down.
You know what I also think we do that's really interesting when it comes to, you know, focusing on how people operate in social dynamics and things of that nature? It's very difficult to put us in the box of angry Black women when you don't have any emotions. It immediately becomes incredibly obvious if people are arguing with what we're saying, or if they're arguing with something else based on what they say in the response. You don't have to scream at people. You don't have to be so aggressive. And immediately, as soon as people hear that, they're like, Denisha was aggressive?
Are you sure? And I think that makes it more aggravating for people. Mm-hmm. It makes it more frustrating. Because they want you to come on the app, lose your head, and it's like never, ever will that happen.
People ask me a lot about debate tips. Your goal is to discredit anything that anybody could use against you to make you wrong. That goes for your appearance, the way you carry yourself, the things you say. The entire list is what people are going to use against you. And so, of course, people will take someone like me who already has brash opinions, if you will, and try to make a list of why I'm a problem in certain scenarios. And so you defeat those things before they can be a problem. I'm not somebody who's yelling. I'm likely not someone who's cussing at you. I'm likely not someone who's done X, Y, and Z, which means all we have to debate over is what I actually said.
I did one debate competition my entire life. Mm. And it was a national debate competition for scholarship money. I came in fourth. Not bad for your first time. And one of the things the instructors told us is, and I've never forgotten it, carried it all the way through court. He said, your opponent is not a person. Your opponent is a voice. And your job is to undermine that voice. And if you can see your opponent as a voice, then it becomes all about you and the argument. And I think that is something that helps me on social media as well, to not take it personally.
Yes.
When someone comes on and says, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, right? Especially for someone like me and for someone like you, where a lot of thought and intention goes into every single thing that we post. You're just a voice.
Yep.
You're just a voice.
People that I don't like, people that I don't think are intelligent, I am still objective enough to be able to tell when they have constructed a good argument. You could not look at content like mine or yours and say that it's not thought out or that it's just completely stupid. You say you disagree. You could pick all the points you disagree with. But to make those types of statements, all that tells me is that you didn't listen, you can't defeat a single argument, and you don't like me.
It also tells me that you lack critical thinking skills. I posted a clip from Jordan Peterson where he made an outstanding point. And he said, if someone continually like violates your boundaries, the best way to deal with that is to stop talking to them because they're not listening to you. Cajoling them into doing something that they've already determined that they're not going to do is a waste of time and energy. People could not take the point because it was Jordan Peterson.
Yep.
My philosophy with people, with points, with thoughts, etc., is that even a broken clock is right 2 times a day. Even if I was the dumbest person on earth, I would have something right to say. sometimes.
It's truly a lack of critical thinking skills. And I also wonder if it's immaturity. It kind of speaks to something that's wrong as well with the way the new younger generation argues or handles problems and is going to see that it doesn't work in the real world, is that they throw the baby out with the bathwater continuously. You cannot change anything or have any progress if you just cut off every single person who's ever said something you don't agree with. You have to be able to hear people out about certain things, even if you don't agree with everything they say. Now, obviously, exceptions to everything. I'm not talking about, you know, kumbaya with KKK members.
Exactly. And it's important to make that point. What people ask a lot of me, and I'm sure people ask you this question, is how do you remain so calm? How do you have so much emotional control? And it's because I actually go out of my way to listen to people who, like, whose stance, right? Like, there's what you say, and then there's your known kind of position or polarity. I go out of my way to listen to people whose polarity is offensive to my sensibilities. And I do this routinely because it's like, that's how you teach yourself to listen well.
Yes.
If you can listen past the point of like, everything about you is so aggravating. Oh my God. Like, I'm thinking about what I heard you say this week or last week. And like, but I can listen and really try to understand what you're like, where you're coming from and the thought process that you have with your points and everything. The benefit is that inversely, it makes me a lot better at conveying my points because I've expanded my understanding beyond the boundaries of my comfort level. And most people are not doing that.
Absolutely not.
Most people are actually offended by the idea of doing that.
There's also the quote that you say often of taking the meat and leaving the bones that I think specific people are very good at. Not everything has to enrage you. You should be able to be calm in a majority of circumstances. People saying things that are egregious should not send you over the edge. Like, perhaps it gets a like, ew, what are you talking about? Why would you say that? But like, we should not be at the point where we're screaming, crying, throwing up. You're allowed to listen to a message and say, trash, 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 loved that, trash, 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 and pack it up and go.
100%.
Take what makes sense to you, and it can really be just that. It's almost as if people think everyone was born into the progressiveness that we see today.
In addition to what you said, there's a lack of pragmatism. Mm-hmm. And that's become a swear word. When you say, and this, I mean, law school, I was always that person that was like, not always. Sometimes I was like, I'm going to let you guys have it. But oftentimes I was that person that was like, that sounds really good in theory, but how effective is the way that you've chosen to go about this? Because when you're thinking about how effective it is, you can't think about the people that agree with you. You have to think about the people who are determined to see your effort fail. How effective is it with those people? Well, why do we care about that? Well, maybe you don't actually care about seeing it get done then.
There it is. I had this conversation and the TikTok video I made about people who are throwing the paint on like the glass coverings of the famous paintings, about how at the end of the day, you have to remember that the point of your movement is to get people to agree with you. And if you didn't care about that and you didn't need that, you wouldn't have movement. It would just be law. What you want would already exist. And so if you do not appear appeasing to a certain extent, it's never going to happen, because you will have people who disagree with you for the fun of disagreeing with you. You have people who disagree with you because they genuinely disagree with you. And then you have people who are going to disagree with you because you've done something to piss them off. And now they just have no reason to help you. And you need them, whether you like that or not. And people are just like, well, this is respectability politics. And it's like, call it whatever you want to. You can call it whatever you want to, but reality proves that I'm correct about that.
And history proves it as well. The people who fought for the rights that we have now, pragmatism was part of what they considered and thought about. And that's why one of the things that just grinds my gears is when people say, you know, we are not our grandmother. We are not our grandfathers. Put some respect on their name, actually.
I feel like my response to that is, you're right. They were smarter and tougher than you. They were walking down the street getting hosed down, getting bitten by German shepherds. You're right. You're not.
Never mind. Yeah, you're not. Thank you for making that abundantly clear. You're not, because they understood something that has gotten lost in translation now. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating to see, because a lot of what you're advocating for is amazing. It would be incredible if we could see it get done, but
you gotta play the game. Everybody is writing and bearing it, thinking the same thing you are, but they're playing the game.
One of the questions that comes up a lot from women is like, how do I find myself? How do I find my purpose? Like, where do I even start? And so for you, like, what was that journey like? Where are you on that journey?
It calls back to who you would be if no one else was around and you had no other influence. What you would want to be doing, what impact you would want to have, who you would want to be around, who you would want to have around, what type of person you want to be, and trying to emulate that in your real life, following that passion. And I think my journey, I've always kind of known what I've wanted to do. And then as you explore more things and you figure out what you're actually good at, you kind of hone in on what it makes sense to do along with what you want to do. But I think I've always known that I've wanted to utilize my voice in some way to make positive change in the world and positive change amongst people. And then I've always just been passionate about music, so that's in there as well. But yeah, thinking about who you are when no one else is around and there's no other influence, what would you be doing?
What were some of the first steps that you took to kind of actualizing that for yourself?
I like to operate life with a very clear plan of what is next almost all of the time. And I think the plan can be as detailed or as, you know, not detailed as you need it to be. But focusing on, okay, if this is what I'm attempting to achieve, what steps do I have to take to get there? So I moved from New York to Connecticut to Vegas, and with the goal of music. And so to make music, you have to be able to afford studio sessions, you have to be able to hire a producer, things of that nature. So it's like, okay, well, I need a place to live, and that means I need a job. I also need to be able to afford studio sessions, so I need to make money. So you get a resume, you get a job. That was step one on my plan. And then figuring out how to save money, figuring out how to promote myself. All of it was about figuring out the steps to get to where I wanted to be in the end. And so even if things get a little convoluted or I get distracted or I'm doing something else or get pulled off course, I always have the soft outline of that plan no matter what.
It speaks to something that comes up a lot in questions too, is like, how do I choose? You know, what do I choose? I would love for young women especially to get comfortable with the idea that, like, even if you made a choice, right? Odds are that choice would evolve and morph, and your path would look different as time went on. Don't kind of allow yourself to think that just because this is how it's always been means that, like, that's how it always has to be. I heard Elon Musk talk about first principles thinking, and he kind of explained, like, that's how you build Tesla, is you challenge the idea that, you know, XYZ is impossible because I've never seen it done. That's how you get the first anything, is you challenge that idea over and over. You've done it. For me, it was like wanting to quit social media because I didn't think I could be a lawyer and do social media. And my dad was like, well, why not? Is your only reason literally because you've never seen anyone do it? That is not a good reason.
I think something that I've always been really good at is understanding that no decision that you make is permanent. You can change your mind at any point. If you do something and it doesn't work the way you want to, it is intelligent to pivot and pick something else and figure out how you're going to make that work. You know, fear paralyzes a lot of people. I remember when I first came away from home, my parents were like, are you afraid? And I'm like, no, I can always just come back home.
I love that. Yes.
You know, if things go wrong, do something different. If things aren't working, try a different way. If, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of. There's no reason to settle and limit yourself of the things that you can do. At the end of the day, you have to remember, this is your life that you are building. And if you are making decisions for other people or you're making decisions out of fear, you are going to be the only one who struggles with that consequence in the end, because you won't have what you want.
I've had like 7 niches on TikTok. Like 7. That word that you used, pivot, is my favorite word, girl. If there's one thing I am good at in this life, it is the pivot. Mm-hmm. It is, if you can be good at pivoting, you will have the most fulfilling life. more fulfilling than you can ever imagine. And not care what other people will have to say, and not care that other people will think, oh, she failed, that's why she pivoted. Not care and just think, like you said, in that vacuum. I've never thought of it that way, but that's brilliant. Think in a vacuum, what would you be doing?
It really has to be internal. Like you have to run your race with blinders on. Other people's opinions on what you're doing has absolutely nothing to do with, it's not their life, it's not their problem. Like, I don't care. Like, you're not living my life. Your opinion, you see, you're stupid for suggesting it. I don't care. Do what you have to do. I remember, this reminds me, so when I first moved to Vegas, I don't drive. I'm a New Yorker. I don't like to drive. I'm not very good at it. But I got a Vespa because otherwise I'd be walking everywhere, Ubering everywhere. And I remember some of my friends were like, don't you feel silly, like, driving around this little moped? Like, what's the problem? I'm like, I pay $3 a month for gas, and it takes me everywhere I need to go. You pay $350 in gas. What is there to say? What is the commentary?
Who looks stupid now?
I have everything that I need. Business to mind, that's what you should find. And then
if there's one thing that, like, everyone can say about you, like, you are not, it's that you're confident. And, you know, confident in this sort of unwavering way, in a way that is probably really frustrating to the people who want to shake that. Is that just something that some people are born with? Are there some people who just have a proclivity to that? Is that a muscle that you've developed over time? Like, what has that journey looked like, the development of that confidence that you have?
I think you can be born with it, but it's also a muscle you can build. And I think, one, again, I think it starts with how you're raised. If you are watching this and you're a parent, make sure you speak life into your children and teach them that their value comes from within and that they can do whatever they set their mind to. That was, you know, taught to me from a very early age, and I think that helped a lot. But also, I've become someone that I can be confident in. I have done things to develop myself as a person, so there is no part of the confidence that I'm portraying that is fake. It's not a fake it to me situation. I can say the things I say about myself because I truly believe them. Whether people agree or disagree, I truly believe them. So that's part of it. I think people need to be incredibly mindful of how they speak to themselves as well. I've never in my life would call myself ugly, would call myself unintelligent, would say anything that would plant those seeds in my mind. People should be very aware of that. Surround yourself with people who breathe life into you and believe in you as well and inspire your confidence, but also develop yourself as a person. Become someone that you're confident in. Become someone who can respond that you're proud of yourself and you are everything that you want to be when someone were to challenge that, and you'll become someone who's unstoppable. Merit cannot be derived externally. You have to build it from within.
And that's so powerful because when it's grounded in something that you did, right? Mm-hmm. It has a different kind of weight to it. What are some of the things that you did that you would recommend women to do that they can start right now?
You should develop yourself as a whole, not just in one arena. So I see a lot of confidence conversations that are solely like, become the hottest version of yourself, become the sexiest version of yourself. And it's like, that's great and dandy. You should be very confident in what you look like. Yes, invest time in how you look. Just make sure you don't put all your eggs in that basket. But also think of what you think makes a well-rounded person. I put a lot of importance on intelligence. I take pride in being well-spoken. I take pride in being a smart person. So I want to learn languages. I take the time to do that. I want to be well-read. I stay curious. I listen to people who speak about things that they're, you know, well-educated on. That's a big thing for me. I care a lot about how my friends and family regard me in terms of how I care for them. So I put a lot of effort into making sure that I'm a good lover. I'm a good friend. I'm a passionate person to know. I'm someone that they can count on. Things of that nature. Whatever you think personally is going to be the building blocks of your personhood that you would be proud of. If you were really good at watering plants and taking care of plants, and every single plant you've ever owned has just blossomed in the best way, and someone came into your space and said, "You're the worst plant owner I've ever seen," that would do nothing to you. You would be confused, right? Because right, you know for a fact, there's the evidence, that that's right, not the truth. So think of everything that could be internal about you that you want to be the glimmering side of your, you know, existence, and develop that. And that'll look different. Everybody puts importance in different things.
If it's not stuff that you think is important, it's not going to make you more confident. If it's not things that you think matter, And that's why it's so important, like we keep saying, to be internally regulated. But I think also, like, what has been so helpful for me is learning to separate confidence from performance and outcome. I had to get to a point where I understood, like, okay, there are certain things that I am good at. And it doesn't mean that I always hit it out of the park. But even when I don't hit it out of the park, I know that I'm still good at this thing. If your confidence is tied as a content creator to the performance of a video, what happens when the algorithm is not feeling you and, you know, it's flop after flop after flop?
Yeah. I love the phrase, or just the mindset of, like, having an expectation or standard of excellence while also recognizing you're human. And it's basically wanting to be the best of the best of the best every single time, whilst understanding that you're not going to do that every single time, and being able to move past it when you don't, because you're human, but keeping the standard at excellence for the next time. Sometimes you hit it and sometimes you don't, you know?
And that's okay. What's, like, the goal, like batting 1,000 or batting 100?
I think it's crazy. 1,000, right? No one bats 1,000.
Yeah, I think it's no one bats 1,000. My point is, no one hits it out of the park every single time, right? And part of life is like finding a form of confidence that can carry you through that, that's not rooted in your performance and can weather the storm of, you know, when you have those up and downs. What elements of your routine at this point are sort of the most instrumental? Because I think, you know, there's self-care, then there's self-confrontation, then there's self-nurturing, and, like, all of them have their place. But what are those things that help you continue to build that muscle and maintain over time?
A lot of self-check-ins and self-awareness and having good people around me. I also have a very solid routine when it comes to most of the things I do. So once you have a routine, if you're doing something the same way over and over again, it becomes a lot easier to hit the standard that you have for yourself. But again, like, I think my mantra is aiming for excellence, but being able to take it if I don't hit it. Not necessarily the message I disagree with, but maybe the aesthetic that I go for, because my aesthetic is very particular on TikTok. And there have been a lot of times that missed that aesthetic. But the response is literally, for me, it's like, I'll be better next time. And then you just go about your day. I've said this on TikTok and it got an interesting reaction, but I was like, I think everybody should play sports growing up. Everyone should put their kid in sports growing up. Because what playing a sport forces you to do is learn how to fail publicly and get over it quickly. Because if you're playing basketball and you shoot the ball and you miss, you don't have the time to sit down and cry because shit's going on at the other end of the field already.
Or
at the
100%. Other end of the
field. You have to get up and get And everybody just saw that you missed that shot. So if you let that internally knock you off course, you are not going to be able to continue to play well throughout the game. And so I just try to apply that mindset, you know, to life. Sometimes you miss it, do better next time. Don't let it happen again. And when it happens again, do better next time. Don't let it happen again. And when it happens again, do better next time. Don't let it happen again.
And that's so important. Like, as someone who, you know, middle school and high school was a two-season athlete, part of that is seeing the big picture of, like, that was embarrassing, but I'm on a team and, you know, that doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. We've still got however many minutes left and I'm not going to be the reason why my team doesn't get this outcome that we've worked so hard for. So yeah, I remember, I'll never forget, one time I was repeatedly late because I was always juggling multiple extracurriculars. And the last time I was late is because my coach made everyone else run while I sat down
and
watched everyone else run all of practice. I cried the ugliest tears. But what that teaches you is, like, look, you don't exist in a vacuum where you can just screw up and do whatever. Like, your actions affect other people. You're accountable to other people on your team. And so you always have to view and evaluate what you do through that lens and keep that in mind.
Agreed. I played basketball and it was a very interesting sports coaches usually hit it right on the money when it comes But that's why it teaches you how to fail, teaches you how to get over it, teaches you how to maintain good grades because you have to be able to play your sport, teaches you what tough love looks like, it teaches you how to work as a team. The list goes on and on. And I'm sure you can get that from other extracurriculars for anybody who doesn't want to play sports or can't play sports, but that's
the right That's the point that you were making, especially basketball, I think. I play basketball too. Basketball coaches are just a different breed entirely.
I'm also a very big, like, tough love type of person. I like that type of encouragement. Like, that's what gets me going. And I think that's how I am able to encourage people in my life by that type of mentality. So sports worked for me in that way.
And so how does that play into your, like, self-care and self-nurturing routine? Because, I mean, I think that's essential.
There's a balance with everything. And I have to preface with that because things, you know, when you take anybody's word or advice and it goes too far in one direction, it becomes a problem. But it's like,
right.
I'm always keeping in mind that there's a goal at the end of the day, and that influences most of my behavior. If I'm upset about something or if something is getting to me, I try to keep in mind that getting over it can be an option. Not focusing on it can be an option. Really weighing what is the best course of action, not just what feels the best in the moment, because in the bigger picture, I will want a certain outcome and will be upset if I let my momentary emotions take me off that pathway. And I get this question a lot, like, how do I deal with down days? How do I deal with down time periods? And it's really just knowing yourself and knowing what you actually need in those down periods. I will go through periods of time where I'm not motivated. I'm not creative. I don't want to do a thing. And I have to figure out, is this something that I should freak out about? Or is this something that I can give into because I know in 4 days I'll be fine and I'll be working like an ox. Sometimes that's the case. If I'm really upset about something, is this something that is going to impact me in a year from now? And if I decide to be out of commission for a week, I'm going to be like, yeah, it makes complete sense. I did that. I needed that time. Or am I going to be mad at myself a year from now for giving that much emotion and that much attention? I try to put logic in the front of almost everything I do.
100%. And you touched on so many gems there. I like say the same thing. Like, I'm not motivated, I'm disciplined, which means that even when I don't feel like it, I do things. And then it's just, you know, a certain level of emotional intelligence to know, well, no, I think I need to sit this one out. But also, like, thinking, you know, big picture about what your objectives are and making sure that your actions are consistent with that and are in line with that is something that's so important. I think the self-awareness is just, you know, key. In addition to confidence, self-awareness is important because that's what separates confidence from conceit, which I think people struggle with.
Yes. Right?
It's what separates confidence from delusion. That self-awareness, like, is that an ongoing thing? Does that evolve for you? Are you constantly kind of learning? Is your self-awareness kind of always being informed by new experiences? Or is it kind of this thing where it's like you have a core sense of who you are? You have a core sense of who Denisha Carter is?
I think it's a combination of things, and it depends what part of myself we're talking about. So yes, I think I do know at the core who I am as a person, but I also am constantly learning more about myself. Something that I love to do, and I think this is great for people when they want to become more self-aware, is ask people about yourself. Now, warning, don't do it if you are going to argue with them or if you are going to be overly sensitive. That conversation is not an opportunity for you to defend yourself. It is an opportunity for you to take in information and say nothing except for ask more questions. But I genuinely like to, you know, people who know me well, ex-boyfriends that I'm still on good terms with, friends that I'm on great terms with, people that I've gone through hardships in life with, I love to ask them, like, hey, what about me in this circumstance made you feel this, that, or the third? What about me are you, you know, what is your opinion here? What was your first impression of me? How do I handle situations? Da, da, da. And you kind of collect that as data. And again, your response has to be, really? Tell me more. What's the example of this? That it can't be, it's not your opportunity to plead your case. I love those types of honest conversations because people will see things in you that you won't see yourself because you don't deal with yourself in the same way that other people do. So I think that's a place that I return back to a lot. I ask for feedback from people a lot. And then you have to be ready to be really honest with yourself, the type of person that you actually are. And I think it's tough because then people, myself included, have to come to terms with the fact that sometimes you don't make the best decisions. Sometimes you're not the best person that you can be. Sometimes you're a little immature. Sometimes you're a little rude. Sometimes, you know, the list goes on. And then you take that information as data and you say, you know, this is what I want to fix. This is what I don't like about myself. This is what I do like. This is what I think I can do better. And the more you do that, I think the better you get at practicing self-awareness, the more self-aware you become. But B, you start to gain more control of becoming who you want to be and how you behave and interact with others.
100%. It's really important to make sure that you don't train the people in your life to feel like they can't be honest with you. That's one of the most dangerous things that you can do, is create an environment where you're surrounded by yes men, because you've punished everyone who tried to be honest with you.
Absolutely. I had a conversation with my friend Devin like a week or so ago, and it was primarily about how we handle different responsibilities and like coming through for one another as friends. And it was basically a conversation where we're just saying, like, you know, we have our own lives going on, and every once in a while we can forget that, and we can think that we are the center and the main character in other people's lives when they are the main character in their life, as they should be. And us telling each other, like, if there are times when we're getting out of hand or crossing boundaries, please tell me that, because I don't want, as a friend, that burden to be on you. If this is something you can't handle because it's too much of me bleeding into you, please tell me that, because that's not what I want to do to a friend. And so those types of honest conversations, you really want to reward with honesty, but also compassion and understanding, because again, like you said, you will train people to not tell you the truth and just distance themselves from you when they have issues if you become someone standoffish and argumentative when something is brought to your attention. But it's tough to have someone say, like, you know, you did the most here, you're not the most compassionate, blah, blah, blah. It can evoke that's kind of like, well, let me tell you about you, but get it under control. Get it on a leash.
Exactly. Exactly. What kind of like dating principles do you have, and how would you advise women to figure out that for themselves and also their own boundaries?
Core principles, I feel like that's almost tough for me to list, because as much as they are things like, you know, must be intelligent, must be compassionate, must be honest, they're also, I guess, really interpersonal about how people interact with me and kind of having chemistry with someone that you can almost feel and identify immediately. But I think just the big thing is going into the dating scene, knowing yourself very well, and knowing that your partner needs to love your authentic self in the same way. And so the boundaries that you are creating, you should not want to lower for anyone or be put in a position that you would have to lower for anyone. The boundaries should be a reflection of what you feel meets your authentic self, what you feel like you deserve, what you feel like you're looking for, what you feel like love should feel like and look like. And those should never have to be sacrificed to be with the right person. Mind you, boundaries are not like, I like to be given flowers every Sunday afternoon. That's not a boundary. That's a request. Things like that you can definitely convey. Sometimes, especially now when the dating pool is interesting, to say the least, people get lonely and want to have people in their life, so they're more likely to be blind to red flags or blind to signs that you're not compatible with someone just to have someone. Really try not to do that. Being alone is better than being with someone who is not right for you.
You touched on something that's really important, is sort of understanding the hierarchy of things, right? Understanding the difference between a boundary and a request, understanding the difference between a standard and a preference, and making sure that those, like we've been saying, are internally defined and internally regulated.
Discernment is something we must practice. I also wish people would understand that the mentality is the goal, not the conclusion, right? If he wanted to, he would. If they wanted to, they would. Is that people put effort into people they care about. What the conclusion of that is, might be going to Paris. It might be having a picnic. It might be carving out FaceTime time. It's going to be different for everybody.
Yes.
Lives. It's the mentality of the fact that people put effort into who they care about that has to stick. Then you figure out what that looks like for you. I think women should get comfortable with putting themselves first, dating with an abundance mindset, recognizing that you don't have to hold on to the one person who's, you know, smiling at you, because there's nobody else who's better. There are more people out there if this one doesn't work out. Even if you don't find someone, being single is not the end of the world for you. Like, a sense of self is necessary.
It's something that we can emulate from our male counterparts, is a healthy dose of, what does Fumi want? What does Denisha want? What, like, taking the time to think about what is it that you actually want? What are the things that you actually need? And it's something I talked about recently. It's like, when I know that you've been dreaming of this wedding for since we were teenagers, and now all of a sudden you date this guy and marriage is just a piece of paper. It's like, that sounds like a software update. What do you actually want?
The marriage being a piece of paper quote sends me, like, it's short circuit reaction almost. Like, I can't.
Every sort of binding relationship you have is represented by a piece of paper. So why are we drawing the line here, sir?
It's like, what is that even supposed to mean?
Because it doesn't mean anything. Correct. And then they're like, yeah, well, you know, it's just a piece of paper. Like, it doesn't make a commitment. That doesn't make a commitment. And it's like, in the same way that your driver's license is, you know, optimal when you actually know how to drive. No one is saying, let's just give two people with no love and commitment marriage licenses. Correct. That's not what we're saying.
That wasn't the argument. So I don't know.
That was not the argument. We were just saying, you know, since you have this commitment, since you've committed in every other way, let's just throw a piece of paper on it and, you know, give both parties a fair amount of legal protection moving forward.
We love a good insurance policy. We love making sure we get to make the call should anything happen. Again, I think it comes down to being able to take the meat and leave the bones. At the end of the day, you don't have to listen to anybody's advice about anything. You can do whatever you want. I am simply trying to point out that the more of your decisions are grounded in you and your perception of yourself and are not influenced by anybody else, the better off you're going to be. That's it. Do whatever you want with that info. Take it, leave it, sell it.
That's it. That's it. It's just advice. Can we talk about this tweet? Hold on. Stop. Because there's no better person to talk to about it. It literally just boing back in my head. Like, this was brilliant. This was a brilliant take, if I do say so myself. She says, I truly dislike the notion that most of the wins you see posted online are fake, so you should be happy with your life. That's coddling insecurity instead of addressing it. The truth is, some people really are winning.
Yep.
And you need to learn to be happy with your life regardless.
Yep. But isn't that the whole thing? Isn't that the whole, like, if you are not shaken by the world around you, you do not have half of the problems that you think you have. That there was a tweet by the New York Post that was about body image that was like, heroin chic is back in. And I'm like, you all know we're allowed to ignore this, right? You can literally see this article and scroll right past it. Like, you do not have to change a single thing about what you're doing. You don't have to internalize. You don't have to listen at all. That is how you should be responding to almost everything that is tossed your way. Yes. But people get mad at that because having control of yourself is not a win.
What I loved about the tweet, it's like so much of the takes that hit are really just coddling insecurity in disguise.
It's a lot of coping.
A lot of coping, a lot of coddling insecurity in a way that, like, and this is a point that I made in that video, is what happens when you meet someone in real life, no filter, and she is stunning. There are people like that. What happens when you meet someone in real life? What happens when you meet people in real life who are brilliant?
Yeah.
What happens when you meet people in real life who have the kind of money that, I mean, money that just will tell you where you can go and where to shove it. That kind of money, right? What happens when you meet those people? And I think that's why we're seeing more of these, like, very egregious crimes that are motivated by envy.
Yeah.
When you look at it, is because insecurities are coddled now.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think people can't handle the concept that someone could be better than them. Like, the idea that everybody is the same has been misused horrendously. Like, some people are better than me. I'm sorry. Not better as how they should be treated as human beings, right? Everybody should have that same equal, decent respect. But there are better singers, babe. There are better singers. There are people that could put me to shame without batting an eyelash with half the work and half the time. It's just what it is. You then get to decide if that ruins your life or if you do what you do with what you have.
Yes. It makes you feel like, as a creator, using, you know, the space that I'm in dating, it's like so many people ask me, can you share your toxic relationship? Can you share like your, you know, toxic date? And it's like, I don't have any to share. I'm sorry. Because I think relatability has gone to this weird extreme. It's tragic.
It is. No, it legitimately is. It legitimately is. And I hope that people can get to a place where that isn't what they need of others, where that isn't an expectation, where other people's successes don't breed an insecurity that creates envy, where other people can shine and you can feel fine shining in the ways that you do, even if that's different. Because, you know, you're much more mentally strong that way.
And you will shine better if you focus on shining the way that you shine, rather than trying to dissect the mechanism behind someone else's shine.
Absolutely.
It was a pleasure.
You know that I adore you. I hold you in the highest regard. So thank you for having me.
Oh, me too. Me too.